to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Well, welcome back to Stacks of Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's Angelica Vlasenko on the phone, or on the board, yeah, on the phone with Mr. Kevin O'Neill, I would think. And she's very happy after a 10-hour, 12-hour stint at a restaurant yesterday serving peculiar people. Is that what you said? Peculiar?
Well, interesting crowd, I would call.
Interesting, peculiar, you know. You know what they say, if you like somebody, they're eccentric. If you don't, they're peculiar, right? Just saying. This is the. I try and give AV a little slice of English, you know, every once in a while, English slang, and I think she wants to throw stuff at me when I do. It's like if you like somebody, they're eccentric. AV, if you don't, they're nuts. Just saying.
Kevin. And where do I fall on that spectrum?
Oh, you're eccentric.
And nuts.
Well, no, but I like you, so you're eccentric. Now, Lou.
Yeah, I usually think that, you know, when you get that oddball person, I think the contrast is eccentric and creepy.
Yes, well, yeah. If they're hanging around like the girl's bathroom, then they're creepy. If they're otherwise, they're just saying. Well, or the guys these days. But anyway, S&P futures down 7.25. Dow futures down 57. A little bit of break in the up move here. We'll see if that hangs. China financial warning signs are flashing almost everywhere. There you go. So I don't know, Kevin. We still have a slowing economy, it seems, and yet market you don't want to get in the way of. So it's a very odd situation. I was having some discussions. You know, these some of the stuff we talk about, even though it's It either is, you know, education related, it's sports related, it's market related, it's politics related. It really, when you see how it all play out, and that's why the more I wish I could go back and take a few of those classes again from George Stigler, because he was a behavioral economist, and all they talk about is the interplay between economic pressures and people's behavior, because, I mean, economics is really a social science. It really doesn't belong in the business school. But there's business economics, which I guess is somewhat different, but it really doesn't belong there. It belongs it's very similar to sociology or psychology, really. And economics is a study of,
let's put it in abnormal psych.
Yeah. Well, but it really is a study of scarcity, right? How do things that are not enough, I mean, that people may want a lot of, yet there's not a lot of for everybody. How do you apportion it? There's economic systems that do that, some better than others. Some get co-opted, some don't. But one of the things I always found somewhat interesting, Kevin, is when things are, quote, I use the term obvious, although no matter what it is. I mean, it's somebody might be who is I've seen people who have studied individual stocks, which is not really what I'm all that great at. I mean, when I have a client that has a big holding in a stock, I'll study up on that stock because of that client. But I'm not, you know. I mean, it's like a Cramer, which knows the name of every single CEO and every stock symbol and all. I mean, I don't aspire to be that at all. But, I mean, there are people that will absolutely tell you, and you see them on TV a lot, absolutely tell you that this stock is trading for $100. You know, it's on a stool with no legs. I mean, the revenue isn't correct. This isn't correct. They're triple counting that. You don't see this too often. And yet, the person who does that kind of study is generally right. And yet, they're generally so early. It takes forever for, like, the story to come out or other people to agree with them or whatever. It's just sort of weird. And you wonder why. Why does it take so long? How does the other side, be it sometimes companies have terrific business or they have could be a biotech that, you know, every stage seems to be going good for, you know, a drug or two or three. You have to snack, you know, $2, $2.10, $2.05, $1.90. Can't get out of its own way. And everybody's shorting the damn thing. And all of a sudden one day, it's like 10. And it's a year after you thought, God, the stuff was like right there. Why? All anybody had to do was read it, you know, type of thing. Because I get this because I don't study them firsthand, but I'll go back afterward and I'll go, gee, why did O'Neill Inc. go up $10 yesterday? And I'll see some story from like a year ago. O'Neill Inc. with a cancer cure. And I'm going, wait a minute. The story was like a year ago and it went up yesterday. It really is amazing the delays in people's recognition, both in economies getting stronger, getting slower. And I don't understand why that is, Kevin. People are is it just that people have so much stuff they're inputting, they're, you know, trying to take a drink out of a fire hydrant or something, that they don't recognize something or they're just not, and all of a sudden it becomes there, and then it's, I watched eBay trade for an incredible PE for years. And I'm thinking, boy, this thing is way too high, way too high, way too high. And like 4 years after, to me, it was somewhat obvious, all of a sudden, hey, they're just a retailer. All of a sudden, now they're priced like a retailer. They're still doing okay. I mean, the stock has always been a good stock to own. But all of a sudden, there's this, you know, thanks for the flash, Gordon. I mean, I don't quite know what that is. I mean, but it happens in politics. It happens in sports. You know, some guy will be good for a few years, and they go, gee, this guy Kevin can hit. Well, he's been hitting for 5 years. Oh, really?
Well, changing opinions is sort of a cattle drive. You know, it's moving the whole herd takes time.
Yeah.
What happens, though, is there's always some that run way out ahead, and there's some that will straggle behind. But moving all of it, it just doesn't happen that quickly. I don't have an explanation for the phenomenon, but that's the way it seems.
Well, and the people,
you know, when people are when we have a you know, a set of beliefs, that they don't change very quickly.
Every one of the most brilliant traders I've met, Kevin, I don't really put myself in that class. I mean, guys really could sense where the market was going and things like that. I mean, my skill set is option trading and futures trading, where if you tell me what you think is going to happen, I can get you there with less risk and more potential reward per dollar spent than virtually anybody. I mean, I'll say that. I don't have much of an ego, but I have an ego right there. It's not the same as me being the guy saying, we're going up tomorrow, we're going down. And every one of those guys that I've talked to, and the ladies, they will say they were virtually always right, and virtually always early. Will be their description of their trading or whatever, their opinions. They'll say, actually, if I see this thing, this technical type of thing, I almost got to, you know, sit on my hands for 2 weeks, because it takes 2 weeks or 3 weeks for it to work its way through. And it's somewhat interesting. I had when we first started the firm in 91, we had this guy who was a massive a developer out in Arizona. Talk about a character, but real bright guy. And he was a trader, and, you know, back when he's doing property, but he still loved trading because he was a Merrill Lynch broker in like 1954 or something. I mean, he was a prisoner of war, World War II, so, you know, that vintage. And he ended up with, just when they were just starting regression analysis. Now, this guy's 65 years old, and he's studying regression analysis, which I'm going to say most people don't know what the hell that even is. I'm not going to go into it now, but let's not go into that. But
my students have a hard enough time with it when I have to get into it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I bet I couldn't do it anymore after it's been so
let's
long.
Let's not ruin Thanksgiving weekend for others.
But it's been so long. I mean, I don't know. I could do it, but anyway, he would chart, and he had, back when the futures source was the big machine for charting, and you had to pay up for this thing, 'cause you had to pay up for the feeds and everything. He had four different technical. He had four screens back in those days, Kevin. Imagine that. He had four screens, and he would have candlesticks. There were four distinct technical studies he would use. One of them was Joe Granville's, of course, from way back in the day. But anyway, when they'd all agree on, you know, wheat or corn or whatever it is, or, you know, pork bellies, or, well, now they're live hogs. They don't do pork bellies anymore, but. He would get in, and he said he'd put a position on, and he'd always put a stop, which people do in the futures a lot. He'd always put a stop, and he found out that at the end of a year, he was like dead even. And all his best trades all got stopped out, and he very seldom did one just go his way? It would always, even if he got long corn, inevitably it went down first and then it went up or something. He'd always get stopped out. So he says, you know, I dropped some regression analysis on all this stuff. I went back in my whole year of trading. I was not lazy. Not like today where you just, you know, everybody wants a service to tell you buy or sell. In fact, went over every single one of his trades. He said every single one of the only one he couldn't have trouble figuring out was the S&P. He said that was kind of a cat of its own color, but all the other stuff, he found there was a pattern to it. That if you got a buy or sell, now, of course, this is out of memory from how long ago the guy was here. But he said, like the corn, you had to wait a week. Pork bellies was like 2.5-3 weeks. So even though all your screen, all your different studies, your technical studies all agreed, buy corn, you had to wait 5 days. Now, I think wheat was 7. I mean, I wouldn't trade on this because this is memory from 30 years ago, but I mean, it's probably different now. But he said you had every single one had a lag time and they were all independently, all different. And he said as soon as he started doing that.
It sounds like he settled into a lag time for each one.
Yeah. And he said, once he started doing that, he started making money all the time. Not all the time, but a lot of time. And, I would never have guessed that. Would never have guessed that. And I don't know why they would all be different. But he said they were. So the only one he had trouble with was the S&P. Now, Jan, when he was on the floor, Dr. J, he would say in the OEX, when I was trading the OEX, he traded IBM. He goes, Chief, the OEX has a 1 day event. Something happens to the market, it's a 1 day event. Something happens to a stock, it's a 2 or 3 day event. Because people come home and they read the Wall Street Journal and they realize that's their stock, and people are going to sell it or buy it, they'll buy it or sell it the next day. The word doesn't get out like as fast as it does in quote the market. I think John's right about that. And he noticed that it was just different. There's no reason for it. Well, he came up with a reason for it, but you never really know if the reason he came up with is right and correct. But it is, you know, it is kind of fascinating, the delays on all this stuff. And, you'll see court cases where people are being brought up on charges 10 years after it happened, it seems like, or 8 years. But there's this, you know, this kind of legs. What did you make all the football yesterday? Is Jerry Jones going to fire everybody?
You know what? It was actually kind of funny with that game on. Every time, and I think it was CBS, every time somebody on the Cowboys did something bad, it was cut to Jerry Jones in the booth.
Well, he's put everybody
and
on notice,
of course,
right?
They got him leaving a few minutes early in disgust. It was like, oh, let's go see if Jerry's having a fit.
Well, I mean, didn't he put everybody on notice Sunday that if the heads would roll if they didn't win on Thursday or something?
Yeah, I don't know what he did there, but I'm sure he's disappointed. They're an underachieving team, and they have been for quite a while, because it isn't as if they don't have talent, although they may, you know, they may be locked in long-term to an okay but kind of mediocre quarterback who made a splash in the NFL right off the bat and really hasn't become, you know, an outstanding quarterback, even though they extended his contract.
You know, I wonder, I think some of these teams, or a lot of them, are really pretty darn good. Now, the Dallas this year, I mean, he spent a fortune. Maybe he paid up huge for this Ezekiel Elliott guy, right? He was on CNBC talking about how much money he paid for the guy. And he's got the offensive line. He paid more money than anybody, right? He probably wonders why they're scoring 14 points a night. And I can understand that, but you know what seems about those guys is they don't have they seem to be they got the same card the Bears have drawn this year is that every game they seem to be on national TV against a really good team.
Yeah, because everybody expected them to be good.
Yeah, so I mean it's not like they're schlumping around playing the. You know, the crummy teams on the noon games on Sunday. I mean, they're not. So,
they play the same schedule everybody else, or most other people in their division do. I mean, the schedules are formula. So that's it's not like someone said, "Oh, let's go create a bunch of great games for them."
Yeah, not really.
Division, no, they don't. They don't do that. You know, you if you're in the NFC, there's you play a different AFC division every year. If you know, and they cycle through, and it's divisions matched up against divisions. divisions. There's a first place schedule and a last place schedule. So you get, if you're a first place team, you get some tougher teams. But it's all formula. There is nothing in there where, you know, what they choose to show on television is another issue. And when they choose to show it, and they will build a schedule around what they anticipate happening. But there is nothing in there where they say, oh, let's go build a tougher schedule for Dallas because we think they're going to be good.
Every once in a while I get to push back on Kevin on sports. It's so much fun. You are correct 90%, my friend. It's everybody plays, like the Bears, everybody in their division played, what's the division with Oakland? They played that division, right?
AFC West.
And they all played the division with the Giants. Right, so you got the...
No, they didn't all play the division with the Giants. The formula there is that, I'd have to look it up to get exactly what it is, but first place teams match up against each other. You know, you get, if you're a last place team, you get a somewhat lighter schedule.
All right, well, here's
based on how you finish.
See, you, I don't know if you were... You might have been teaching a couple weeks ago when Maddie went through this whole thing. You had three other teams in your division, right? So that's six. Correct. You play them all twice. Mm-hmm. So then you play another. You play a division in the AFC. So that's another four. So that's ten. Then everybody plays the same division in the NFC. And this year they play the Giants and the Redskins in that group. So that brings you to 14. Then it's the other two games. Where if you're crap, you play two other crap teams and you're not on national TV. That's where the Bears picked up. The Rams and Kansas City this year, which clearly are two, you know, playoff teams last year.
Well, Kansas City's AFC West.
Yeah, I'm saying they picked the two teams that aren't in that group, the Rams being one of them. I thought it was you're right. It must have been the Chargers. No, the Chargers are in that group. The
Chargers are in the West as well.
There's two teams that the Bears picked up that were both playoff. What's his name? New Orleans.
Yes, that was based on winning the division last year, not because somebody said, ooh, this looks good.
But what I'm saying is that if you win the division, those other two teams become, the extra two games are really good games on national TV. Now last year, I don't know who the Bears had because they came from nowhere.
I understand that, Tom. Yeah. It's formula.
Right.
Drives that. It's not some schedule maker saying, oh, I got a good idea. Here's a good matchup.
But I'm saying that when the Bears, when I saw the schedule this year, the first thing I said was they could be 9-7 and actually be a better team than they were last year. And I think that Dallas, to a certain extent, has fallen into that crack.
Well, and I don't think we're going to know the answer to that because I don't think they're going to make 9-7.
Dallas?
No. The Bears.
No,
not like Dallas is either.
Well, I mean, they're still leading their division. So who else is in their division? It's that lousy, right?
For the Redskins, time being, yes.
Well, the Redskins and Giants, who's the other team?
The Eagles are going to tie them this week.
You think the Eagles are going to beat them?
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, but I'm saying but if you're in that loop where you're playing, you know, two decent divisions in your own division, of course, your own division is crap, and the other two games are good.
No, it's not. Minnesota's pretty good, and the Packers are good.
I'm talking about Washington and...
Dallas's, yeah.
Yeah. Other than the Eagles. And the Eagles looked like they were going to fall apart, too, and then they came back. Right? They've been there the first few weeks. They looked terrible.
Yeah. They didn't start well.
Yeah, you know, I look at the Dallas, and I get the feeling that it's 50%, you know, you being absolutely correct, the quarterback has not developed that much more. And the other is they missed the... Who do you guys at Bears had to put him in the Super Bowl? Devin Hester. There's not the
explosive guy.
Well, the guy that just, you know, you've got the.
We have Amari Cooper though.
Well, but I'm saying everybody. How can you say this? You need. It's like when the Bulls had Jordan and Pippen, who were spectacular, but you put Tony Kukoc in the mix, and it just became impossible. I mean, if they've got Amari Cooper that. If you just have to worry about him, you can sort of deal with him. The tight end's pretty good. They don't really have the slot guy, you know, that all of a sudden, no, here's another guy because the other two guys are covered. This guy's going to kill you. You know what I'm saying? It's like they're almost like they're one guy short. And somehow or another,
I think that's part of it, Tom. I think part of it is that they, you know, every time I've seen them, which is not very much, so I will, you know, fully admit to a small sample size, they have one of the best Ezekiel Elliott, and they don't feed him. They, you know, the play calling is somewhat is suspect.
Yeah.
But ultimately, when a group underachieves, if you probably if you dig into it, you're going to find that they're kind of rudderless in terms of leadership. And while that starts at the top, and it is a big part, of the coaching challenge, especially in the pros, where you really have a lot of egos to manage, and you know it's not the same as college, where you know they aren't fully developed as you know as adults and as leaders, but the best coaches have good leaders on their team, and they're really good at working through them to get their messages across to keep their team focused. Because it's really hard, whether it's the NFL over a 16-game season or the NBA over 82 games or whatever, it's hard to keep everybody on track and focused game after game after game. And you know, sloppiness becomes part of what you do, and, you know, there's just a lot that breaks down. We see that with the Bears. You know, what are they? They're, you know, we even saw it yesterday. They're a team of screw-ups.
Yeah,
they don't stay focused on anything, and so you get this constant barrage of killer mistakes, you know, blown assignments, all of that kind of stuff, because they just really aren't all that focused, and something is breaking down within their whole. And it's the same thing in business. You know, it's the same thing in business. If you don't have a good leadership culture and a good leadership structure throughout your business, you're going to get the same kind of, you know, lackadaisical stuff going on top to bottom, and it's just killer. It's killer for any organization. It's just that it's really obvious when we watch it in sports, because it's right there front and center for us to see.
Well, I a lot of the weird stuff, I mean, you see these mistakes being made, and the referees are, well, the refs are almost as bad as the players, but what do you make of the fact that it seems to me, and I'm just guys watching these games, and I'm not a study over like Webby is, but the more they worry about helmet to hits, the more there are every game. You come in, I don't remember, you'd see one of those, maybe I wasn't looking for him, but you'd see him 5-6 years ago, and it was like, you know, wow, that guy cracked somebody in the head with his helmet. Now,
well, remember they used to talk about Singletary. He broke helmets.
Yeah. Well,
that was admirable once upon a time.
Yeah. Well, but I guess what I'm saying is, everybody knows that everybody's watching somebody come in and hit the quarterback. I don't watch a game now where the quarterback doesn't get clocked in the head twice. I mean, how dumb are these people? I mean,
first of all, how dumb are you to lead with your head? Because everybody knows it's a big point of emphasis.
That's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, I think that's stupid. Now, again, you have to overcome a culture that for years and years and years has said, you know, the harder you hit the guy, the better. If you can leave a brown spot in his pants, that would be even better still. So, you know, that's the instinct. But you have to, you know, it's like one of the things in any sport, and I can't remember what situation we were talking about yesterday when we were watching the game, but it's some things you just have to run through in your mind before the play. You know, smart players are always, you know, think of it with the baseball analogy. You're on second base. Well, what do you do when you're on second base? First thing, how many outs do I have? Second of all, where are the fielders? You know, where are the infielders? How are they positioned? And you just run through about, you know, 7-8 things just every single time, because that's just the way a smart ball player thinks and talks to himself as you go through. And these guys, you see guys that do dumb things, and they couldn't possibly have thought it through beforehand.
How much of it?
I think, you know, again, smart teams talk. Again, this is a business thing as well as anything else. Smart teams talk. People talk to each other. They remind each other. They're constantly, you know, there's this whole culture about how we go about our business and how we all stay on the same page. And when it doesn't happen, it shows up in performance.
How much of it is equipment? You look at some of the shoulder pads these guys wear. I don't know if you're going to deliver. You know, even you or I, if you're going to deliver a hit, I don't think you can do it with the shoulder pads anymore. You got to use the helmet. Some of them don't even.
Well, but the shoulder pads are, you know, they're better padding than ever, though. It may be smaller, but the materials they use.
What I'm saying, the used to have the hard pads on top of the soft pads, right? So if you wanted to nail a guy running, you could put your shoulder in him and deliver a message. Some of these don't have any hard pads at all. They're just the soft pads. They're not an offensive weapon, really.
Well, sure, but it's like, you know, the flak jackets you can get. Everything is the, you know, quote, space-age materials now.
No, my
it's all lightweight. It all distributes. It distributes the blow. It's designed to, you know, to not absorb, but to distribute it across a wider spectrum of the pad, and, it you know, it's going to help.
My point was, if you want to use the term hurt somebody, you got to use your helmet. You can't use a shoulder pad.
Well, that could be. Yeah, I think that, you know, that's probably reasonable. And there's long, you know, even going back to when there were suspension helmets, there were still advocates who said, you know, if we just take off the face mask, people would stop bleeding with their helmets.
That is the truth. Hey, did you already do your shopping last night? SP Futures are down 6
yeah,
and a quarter.
It's all done.
We'll see what Kevin bought at 2 in the morning online. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamari's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. She's AV on the board. S&P Futures down 550 now. NASDAQ Futures down 2025. Individual stocks. Not much happening. Kevin, did you, speaking of all the, my machine's a little bonky here this morning, did you read the, articles that were coming out this weekend about this new phenomenon of, Christmas loans? And how
no, people are borrowing the Christmas shop?
Yeah, well, instead of, for those, I mean, it is America after all, and most people would say that the interest paid on your credit card, although a boon given to banks and to, we'll say oligopolies and so forth. We're not sure why that is. But they're, you know, what, they're 24%. You know, 20, 18, maybe if you get good credit, they're 12. Well, evidently, these people, there's all these firms now online that you can go to. They'll lend you $1,000 to $5,000 for Christmas shopping, payable back next year, and the rates are 12 to 13, 14, way, way less than credit cards. So people are opting for these things. I mean, but did your
I guess it's a better alternative to a credit card. But whatever happened to the good old fashioned Christmas club?
I was going to say, do you remember what that is? I figured you would.
For our listeners who don't remember,
yeah.
or are too young to, Christmas club was where it was just a savings account. It was just another kind of a savings account, but this was where you stashed away money on a regular plan. You'd sock $10 or $30 or whatever it, you know, every paycheck would go into the Christmas club account, and then come Christmas time you had a lot of money saved up for shopping.
And my aunt used to do that way back, but people did that. Yeah. But now
and the banks used to make it into a thing, you know,
yeah.
So that you know, they'd throw in some other little perks and giveaways with it too. So you know, it was a product. In the end, it was a savings account, but you know, they make it into a product so that it had some kind of
So, you know, you remember that they've been doing the banks. I remember my aunt would do it at Carson's. So when she'd go to Carson's and give them, you know, $25 a month, and at the end of the year she had whatever.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, DAX up 19.1%. These are all real. Nothing's going on here. FTSE down 15.2. CAC round up 6. Call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 115. That's 0.5%. Shanghai down 17. That's 0.6. These guys are moving a little bit. Hang Seng, however, down 5.47. It's 2%. Ouch. 30 years, I think, 176. None of these have moved. They're 176, 0.36 negative on the Bund. Japan minus 0.08. Gold up a buck and a half, 1462, not doing much. Oil, 5802, right where it's been, like, right for a while. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It is 37 past the hour, 37 degrees currently in Chicago. The weather will remain steady throughout the day with the cloudy skies, with the highest of 40 and the lowest 37. High chances of rain later at night. In Phoenix, it's 51 degrees at this moment, and flash warning with thunderstorms. Afternoon becoming mostly sunny, and the night expected to be quiet and clear with the highest 57 and the lowest 42. In traffic, I see the best and the clearest image of the map. Only one accident reported on Clark Street at West Ohio. Which doesn't really affect the traffic. Other than that, no delays, clear and free expressways. In sports, looks like you guys discussed all the most exciting things, so I have nothing to add.
Well, that's okay. We did a pretty good job. We did your job for you.
Yes, you did.
And you're always happy when somebody takes care of the sports part.
Yes, that makes me happy.
Because you were working yesterday rather than your eyes glued to the TV set.
Oh, yeah. I don't even have a TV.
See? Well, there you go. I guess that doesn't surprise me.
We're gonna make a football expert out of Angelica, though. Before too long, she's gonna be on here, you know, cursing the Bears just like we do.
Yes.
And, no, I have to be stocks expert.
No, that's irrelevant stuff. The life revolves around the Bears and the sports.
Speaking of which, there I was driving to my bros for Thanksgiving, and I've got the. The end of the Bear, I turn on, news radio is the Bear aftermath, right? So, somehow or another, because the Bears won, everybody's so nice to them, right? They were talking about how difficult it was at the last minute to prepare for a quarterback they had never seen. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, whoa. We got a Hall of Famer that you don't have to play against, so I guess that's a good thing.
I don't know that he's a Hall of Famer, but a good quarterback.
Stafford?
Matthew Stafford.
He's borderline. I mean, his stats are huge. He just hasn't been on a team with a crummy defense. Anyway, borderline. He's been an upper level quarterback, shall we say. You agree on that?
Upper third. Certainly upper third. Yes. Maybe upper quarter.
So, you don't have to worry about him. And the guy that's been backing him up all year, all of a sudden you don't have to worry about him. And you got some guy who's never started a game. Came from Purdue, and now the difficulties in preparing for a quarterback he never saw before. I'm thinking, wait a minute, here's a guy that couldn't even make.
You think they felt? You think he felt?
Yeah. What are you talking about? I mean, obviously he's different. You don't know what his skill set is, but turns out he had quite a skill set. How the hell do the
he's a ball player?
Yeah, and how do the Browns have this guy on their team? Evidently, I don't know if you heard this part. They throw him in a mop-up role for like the last quarter of one of the exhibition games. Nobody even watches now. Evidently, the kid looked so good that Detroit went out and sent a bag of balls to Cleveland to get the guy. And Cleveland goes, here, you can have him. Kid looked pretty good to me.
Well, Cleveland also has
understand.
Their own first-round draft pick at quarterback, so they're probably not going to play him, and they're probably not thinking much beyond that. Not that that's a good idea to not think beyond it, but once a guy's starting to get older like Stafford, then you start thinking succession maybe, right. But ultimately you're just saying he's bound to get hurt because everybody does at some point.
Well, it is something I listened to. You remember that wacky guy.
Hey, let me throw out one other thing before you say that. And, you know, they also may just be looking and saying, good athlete. You know, that I might have a guy like Edelman, you know, who was a college quarterback, and they're just saying, good athlete. He's worth having, which Cleveland should have been able to figure out, too.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this, and very amazingly enough, Kevin, it fits into the story we were talking about earlier. People, they see things right in front of them, and they don't recognize it. I read once that the hardest thing in the world to scout is your own team. Trying to figure out how.
Oh yeah, because you're already in love with your own player.
Yeah, but I remember that wacky guy who played softball with us way back in the day, Jeff Beiler.
Sure.
Big left-handed guy. Well, he ended up. This doesn't happen to many softball teams, but he was our left fielder. He had to leave in the middle of the season to go play for the Yankees farm system. Right. He was a pitcher. Had this absolute rubber arm. He could throw the ball a million miles an hour. And so he goes down there. But now he's he's just a regular schlump. He's not a high pick for anybody. So, and he was, could be somewhat of an odd duck, but a pretty good guy. So he comes back, and I go, so, what happens? And he goes, well, I go down there, and he was down there for something like 35 games, and he started like one, like the week before. And he says, I got so bored I never pitched, and I go in the batting cage one day, and the guy was a hell of a hitter. You know, I start ripping off line drives, and they come, what are you doing in the batting cage? We have a designated hitter in the American League. We don't want you in the batting cage. He goes, but I can hit, too. We don't care if you can hit. You're a pitcher. But I'm not pitching very much. Anyway, so he pitches one game, like the last game of the year, pitches seven shutout innings, and they cut him. Don't invite him back. It's all about the top 25 guys that they drafted that they care about, and the other guys are just there to play against those guys. And he goes, if you're Hank Aaron and you put 15 over the wall, they're going to notice you even if you're a walk-on. He said, but it's really pretty hard if you're sort of on the same level as the guy they're grooming and want them to look better than you. It's really pretty hard to do that. And people don't look at, God, we picked up Kevin O'Neill. I don't know where the hell we got him from, but the kid looks like he can play. That's not the mentality. Oh, wait a minute. He can't be better than the guy we just paid $4 million for. The last thing we want to do is for Kevin to show that guy up. That's why I always saw
it. You don't want the cognitive dissonance that goes with that. And you don't want, and you are invested in someone and you want to focus on developing, the guys who have tied up investment dollars. I get why they do it. It's pretty short-sighted.
But I mean, if you put this kid yesterday, if you didn't know, and I'm not, well, I guess when the truth hurts, it should. If you didn't know that the Bears traded up in the first round to get Trubisky, and he's a third year player now? If you didn't know that and look at those two guys yesterday, who would you have picked?
Oh, probably their guy in the first half. In the second half, I would have taken Trubisky.
But I mean, it's not obvious who is the guy that's the absolute can't miss franchise quarterback that you've pinned your entire future on. And which guy is the walk-on? It was not obvious.
Yeah, no, you would. The other thing that comes with that, Tom, is that if you stood them side by side, then you'd probably have a 4-inch height differential. And
I don't know who's.
I don't know which one's faster, but there's also the measurables thing that comes into play.
Right.
As people evaluate them, and sometimes they forget that once in a while somebody's just a good football player.
I think that kid was pretty tall, actually.
No, somebody said on the pregame when I was driving in on the radio that they're standing next to him, and if he's 6 feet, that.
That's a problem.
Yeah, they didn't think so. They didn't think he was even that tall.
Well, yeah, you can't believe those. I still remember the one night that I was in the elevator with Paul Hornung and Pat Hayden. And Paul was listed.
Pat Hayden is one runty creature.
Yeah, well, he was listed as what? 5'11. Or something, and Paul Hornung was listed at 6'2". At the time, I was 6'4", and I'm saying Paul's at least my height, huge man, and Pat Hayden came up to about my neck. The two of them standing next to each other looked like Mutt and Jeff. And yet on the tip sheet, they're what, 3 inches different? They had to be six or seven.
Yeah.
And Paul Hornung's a big guy. I mean, even some of these dudes in the mortal words of Marty O'Connell, I learned how to trade options from, he's been a sandbagger his whole life.
there are people like that too. Yeah. That there's probably more exaggeration than sandbagging, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he never wanted to be. Was it him or was it Walton? Now I'm trying to remember. It might have been Walton who just said, 7 foot is a freak. I don't want to be that.
So he was 6'11". Right.
Yeah, so I'm going to be 6'11".
Well, Bill Walton.
Don't like it? Too bad.
Bill Walton was a spectacular basketball player.
Who are you going to believe me? Who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes?
Yeah, I guess sports really is. I mean, that's why I love doing the show with the two together, because sports is politics, it is business, it is the market. I mean, it's all those things, right?
It is, but the one thing is, it's all out there for us to see.
Yeah.
There is so much less that's behind. There is stuff behind the scenes for sure, but there is more that's out there for us to see, and that's why what I really enjoy about discussing the games. Yeah, they're great. I love the games, but ultimately the part that fascinates me is that all of the dynamics that you see in a business, that you see in any kind of an organization, a political organization, a charitable organization, doesn't matter. It's all out there for us to see. And that's pretty darn interesting.
My nephew, who, shall we say, once in a while there's only a certain amount of hard opinion, in my opinion, one should have without the corresponding amount of rigorous research. Is that a fair way to say it? We're never going to let the...
In other words, don't be full of crap.
I find it very humbling, Kevin, that I'll have an opinion from years and years. But now that it's happened to me a bazillion times, I don't feel the same way about my opinions. I'll have an opinion that, I mean, on a subject that I really don't care that much about. And I'll talk to you or Lou or somebody, and I'll find out, you know, those guys, they're pretty bright, and they got a different point of view. And I'll actually do some research on it, and I go, man, how do I tell Kevin he's right without really telling him he's right, you know? But, I mean, I think anybody who really, when you see the list of subjects out there and then the breadth of things you'd like to understand and know, how can you always be right from the get-go and never change? I mean, I don't see anybody, I don't think that's waffling. If you only have an opinion on, I mean, like one or two things, then I guess it's waffling. If you, the other, where I think it's evolving, or is that a different term? Your opinions, anyway, he was telling me about how the underside of football, sort of like what I talk about the underside of the market, you know, with the income numbers and a lot of the stuff that we see happening in the economy is kind of undercutting this market rally, even though the rally shows no signs of stopping. His point was the underside of, like, these ticket prices, the live gate. He was telling me last week in Washington you could have got in for $15. Now, wasn't there a time 10 years ago where Washington was the highest ticket price in football and the most profitable team? I don't know if they're there yet. But they're there now. I mean, I don't know. I don't watch it all the time, but he was, I guess, looking at someone else to talk to his buddies about it. But there's teams that are really hurting on these live gates. I mean, not every city is like Chicago where you got a 6 million person Love the Bears 60,000 seat stadium where kind of no matter what happens with eight events that you can fill them up. But really, some of these other places.
The fortunate thing for the Bears too, both fortunate and unfortunate, because it does leave some money on the table when they're good, is they have one of the smaller stadiums in the league.
Well, but
it's always going to look full. It's always going to support ticket demand until they suck long term. And when that happens, which we've seen at various times, when that happens, then it starts out with no shows, and then it starts translating to, how many times we have seen on occasion when they've had to scramble to, that last day to sell some tickets so that they could be on home TV.
Right. By the way, is that still a rule?
Don't know. As I was saying it, I thought the same thing to myself. Is that
I don't think it is.
Rule, or does it not matter anymore?
I don't think it matters anymore. But the whole idea is, I mean, and the Cubs are perfect examples of this. I mean, in Chicago, well, especially, I'm going to say in baseball, if you want to sell tickets in April for April games, you better sell them in January. You're not selling them in April. I mean, the idea of the walk-up crowd of, you know, especially at these prices where, you know, six guys are going to be having a beer after work downtown and saying, hey, let's go to the Sox game and go and stand in line for a ticket and walk in. I think that ship is totally sailed, Kevin. I mean, it'll happen.
No, when I lived in Milwaukee, that was really doable.
Right.
and a lot of people did it all. It was, you know, I think I'll go to the game tonight. And there were always some pretty good seats available, and it was so easy to navigate the city. As our buddy Bob Golden told me when I was looking into living there, and Bob had been up there, and I called him up and I said, so Bob, tell me about living in Milwaukee. First words out of his mouth were, Kevin, it's a 15-minute town.
Yep.
What do you mean? He said, well, it never takes more than 15 minutes to get anywhere. So you could actually go home after work, grab, you know, have something to eat if you wanted to, you know, change into something more casual, and then turn around and go back to the ballpark and be in your seat for the first pitch. Can't do that in Chicago.
No, when they were building Sox Park, which is a long, long time ago, of course, Kevin, my thought was the last thing you want is to have people have to drive twice, drive home, drive to the game. So the idea of putting Sox Park just south of Roosevelt Road here and having a for lack of a better term, light rail from downtown right there where you and I could actually walk out of work at 5 o'clock and have the game start at 6 and say, hey, let's go watch the game, and be able to hop up a little people mover and get there. Or if we had parked our car downtown to work, not have to move the car to go down there, I thought was just a spectacular idea. And, of course, It went nowhere.
Yeah, I think your problem there, Tom, would have been going back to get your car.
Well, if you, I'm talking about if you had light rail on the streets, you know, essentially an L train on the ground, although it wouldn't go as fast. I mean, why not? It's all a question of hopping back on and going. I mean, as long as you go back and forth. Because you don't use the L cars at night anymore. At night, you could have something on the roof, put a pantograph, run up and back, right? You mean it's not like we don't have the equipment that would be available at 11 o'clock to go back and forth. We can line up five trains and go.
Right, but what I'm saying is at 11 o'clock, people don't want to go back, get their car, and then go home.
They're going to the parking lot and get in their, their car and go home. But if you did it right, you could have that train get you back to your downtown parking lot almost as far as quickly as a far spot in Comiskey Park or Sox Park.
Possibly.
I'm saying possibly, done properly.
Or maybe the other thing to do is on game days, you know, of course people aren't going to do then that, this takes out the spur of the moment, but maybe on game days you allow people to park at the ballpark all day and you light rail them you shuttle them to work.
Well, plus on one side of where this my stadium would have been are the Rock Island tracks. On the other side are the Burlington tracks, right?
So you put a stop there.
Ding, ding,
and
ding.
The people that ride the trains in to work can ride them home.
Well,
and you have a Sox special that that runs when after the game ends. That leaves 30 minutes after the game or something like that.
I would say that they put, after all these years, a couple years ago, they put a Rock Island stop at 35th Street. I'm going to say people from Beverly, my nephew said, I go to the Sox game, I walk out the back door and I hop on the train. Why would I ever drive? Right? I mean,
we must not be able to do that.
Anyway, Kevin, we're talking about the something you always like to talk about is the strength or lack thereof of your news media. And it's somewhat amazing to me that there's a lot of, and I talk about this once in a while, but I'd like to talk about you more because you come up with more of the, why it is the way it is, the Cheryl Atkinson sort of story. The phenomenon that I brought up about the Christmas borrowing, the reason why I brought that up is because one of the things I'm seeing, if you, hopefully you don't have to do this, but if you flip on CNBC or Fox or Bloomberg, you literally won't go 2 minutes without one of the talking heads will say, the consumer is incredibly strong, he can carry the economy no matter what. And yet you hear me and Carl talk about where the actual income numbers are, where the inflation numbers sort of are, and what exactly you're expecting people to do when they're not making more money. And the phenomenon, I did not realize, Kevin, again, I'll call myself a dummy when I'm showing my age in the sense that when somebody tells me their hourly wage, I immediately, evidently stupidly, multiply it by 40 and figure out how much they're making per year. And evidently, that is really the wrong thing to do today. That a lot of people are working 38 hours, 37. If it's a slow week, 32. I don't know how you can even make $10 an hour.
That's not math you can do in your head easily. So
no, but it's also, I mean, at least if I'm going to work somewhere for $10 an hour, I want to know, okay, that's 4 hours a week. That's 16 a month. I share an apartment with somebody where the apartment's 500. That gives me $1,100 to live on. At least I know where I'm at. It's not a good place, but at least, that's the math that should be going through everybody's head. Well, how the hell do you even do that if you don't know how many hours you're working? Anyway.
Right. I will tell you a couple of things in that last 40 seconds of what you had to say. One is, as we've discussed before, it seemed like the economy was slowing, not crashing or anything like that, but I was seeing as good as the employment situation has been where I live, I've seen it slowing down and people not working as many hours. But in those cases, that means that the 50-hour weeks are down to 40. There had been a little bit of layoff, but not much. I'm actually seeing that pick up again now. So for what it's worth, even the RV industry is up year over year now on its last few months of numbers. So, it's just something to watch. Something, pay attention to it. See if it's any kind of a lead indicator. You mentioned Cheryl Atkinson, which is, keeping a list. And as you know, because we've had her on the show a few times.
Making a list, checking it twice?
She's not enamored of media bias. And so she's been keeping a list of the untrue stories published in the Trump era, and yesterday tweeted out that we hit number 100 on her list. We added the 100th item to her list. I'll see if I can find it again and tweet it back out to the listeners. But it was Newsweek's report. One of the Newsweek reporters actually tweeting out kind of the Nero's fiddling type of tweet about what Trump's doing on Thanksgiving, only to find out he actually jumped on a plane, went to Afghanistan to feed troops. So,
well, that's a hell of a trip for 2.5 hours. But anyway,
well, he also met with a leader in Afghanistan,
right? Which I think is a pretty good idea.
Some kind of a ceasefire there, so it wasn't a complete. He doubled up on the business. Let's put
I would agree. Plus, it was all the crap that's happening here. That was a smart move on his part. Get away and do something presidential.
Yeah, well, he did it last Thanksgiving, too, which is the ridiculous part about anybody tweeting about what the president's doing on Thanksgiving. He snuck off to Afghanistan last year, so what did they do? How soon we forget.
Well, so how was yours? You got 30 seconds. So who cooked?
Winifred cooked, my sister-in-law, and we had the traditional, I'm from Mississippi, Thanksgiving dinner, which also means, it means turkey and stuffing and all that, and it also means greens with ham hocks.
Cool. Did you?
Excellent.
You didn't let
excellent.
You didn't let Tim carve the turkey, did you?
I believe he did, and he only missed a few times, when he swung the knife at it.
Did he still have 10 fingers for dinner?
Yeah, I don't even remember a Band-Aid.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you next week. Have a good weekend. What do you think tomorrow night, Stanford?
Irish better win. Yeah. Stanford's not very good.
Well, they only have 58 guys on scholarship, according to Bell, though. That's not very many.
That kind of gets to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Anyway, have a good one. SP Futures down 5. Right back, Mr. Russell Rose.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Dan, she brought us a whole bag of food for the restaurant.
Close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. Do we have Russell with us? Russell, how are you?
Hello.
Hello.
I'm good.
S&P futures down 550. NASDAQ futures down 21. See if you were here. AV brought us a big smorgasbord from the restaurant last night. Not sure I need any more food, but you know, I'll probably dive in for some. Just saying.
Oh, I've been on a diet. I'm the only person in America that hit a new weight low this morning.
Really? Well, I think that might be in my future here a little bit. If I want to do any. If I want to do any skiing this year, I don't want to be like Stocks and Jacks host takes out lift line nine die, you know.
Yeah. I totally understand that.
Yes. Last thing you want to do is do that, you know. Anyway, so how are you? How was Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was very nice. A bunch of my wife's family came over. I was the only person from my side present, which that's a positive sometimes. There was no fights. I love all the, you know, you were just talking about the fake news type stuff. I love all the articles about how to handle the political discord in your household at Thanksgiving. There was none of that at our table, even though we had very disparate views at the table.
Were they all female?
No. But, you know, people that absolutely despise the president, and people that are still on board with the president. And there's more than one of us that's still on board with him.
Well, it's a very tough spot to be because if you look at the policy, I mean, it kind of comes down to this. If you look at the policies, and you know, I have people very close to me that feel the same way. I'm not so sure the policies are all that horrible. Matter of fact, I think some of them are pretty good. But just the idea that somebody so morally repugnant is the number one. Most people, a lot of women, a lot of blacks, a lot of people who are minorities, feel that his rhetoric and his manner of speaking is something that doesn't belong anywhere near us right now at this day and age. And that,
and
no matter what, whether you got a tax, I mean, there's some people that if you cut your taxes, they don't care if it's Attila the Hun there. But a lot of other people just don't feel that way. They feel that person needs to be somebody that you can point to and say, at least this guy's not going to steal 10 bucks out of your back pocket if you're not watching. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it just, and you're not going to, I mean, you're never going to have that discussion with Eric. Eric Mayo comes on. Eric's African American. It will tell you flat out that everywhere he goes, that he overhears, he has good hearing, the issue of the way people talk is different than it was 4 years ago. They feel much more
enabled to say stuff you wouldn't have said 5 years ago. And I know on the South Side, I've heard the N-word way more than I ever heard in the last 20 years, the last three. And a lot of people attribute that to him, that now it's okay to act like a cad, because he does. And I mean, and there's, so the policy-wide, I get it. On the other side, I get it. I mean, I just...
I don't like the guy. That's for darn sure. And he's not, 4 years ago, I've said this before, 4 years ago, one of the things that he said he was going to do was reform, scale back Dodd-Frank and some other things. And I sent in and, you know, I did all the paperwork to go work at the White House. I was like, I would like to be involved in, I had strong opinions about all of that legislation. I felt like I had some decent ideas on what to change. And I applied to go try to help with that. I was all fired up about that. And didn't even get a call back. But I would not do the same thing today.
Well, when you talk about cutting back, there's things that, you know, that are sort of deal breakers for me. Obviously, my deal breaker with Hillary Clinton when she got the trades in her account that weren't hers and kept them. I mean, for a trader on the floor, that's you did that once, and I don't like you for the rest of your life. You know,
that's just.
I mean, I'm like, talking about a guy I spent 19 years down there where your word was your bond. This dude would last 1 hour. He'd renege on every trade.
Yeah,
right. I mean, who would trade with the guy?
Nobody after the first day.
Yeah,
that's the self-regulation of the floor that was so great.
Yeah, and anyway, I have a question for you. Where we're talking a little bit about the at some point, I'll use the term mature. I won't say age.
As you get better.
Yeah. I'm finding when it comes to lying to people or bearing false witness, isn't that what the commandment actually says? I find it is much. It's much more. What's the word? Help me here, Professor. What's the word? It's worse, which is not the right word. It's much worse to tell half a story sometimes than it is to lie, to actually say something.
You mean
something
to be, basically to be misleading?
Right.
Or I think the term we used to use for it was to tell a white lie.
Right. Well, I mean,
I don't know where that phrase came from.
The example always was, my favorite example was Sammy Sosa in front of Congress. I've never broken the laws of, where do you come from? Dominican Republic or
oh,
the
I like
US.
That.
Yeah, or the U.S., and I've never injected myself with steroids. Now, if you were to ask 99% of society, he denied he ever took steroids. No, he didn't. He could have been in Mexico for 6 months popping 12 pills a day, and everything was fine with that statement, right?
He could have had somebody else inject him.
It made it sound like he didn't like needles. I'll buy that part.
Okay.
I'm not so sure I want somebody injecting steroids into my private parts. I don't care who you are, type of thing.
Okay.
I'm just saying. But when the people on TV constantly talk about this strong consumer. I was going to get this with Kevin, but we never did. Don't you think you need to mention things like this huge phenomenon this year of these Christmas borrowings and things? Now, I'm looking at, now these are just the simple dates I pick up. I'm looking at, in 2008, the average debt, personal debt per citizen was $56,000. Okay?
Okay.
By 2012, it had dropped down to 52 because after the, you know, bad recession, families, you know, cut in a little bit, shall we say?
Yeah.
And now, you know, since 2012, we're back up to 60. We were 56 in 2016, and now we're over 60, almost 61. So when you have people's earnings aren't going up so much, how much can you cheer a consumer unless you know whether it's for me, if somebody needs a new bed, okay, or whatever they need, and they maybe don't really have the dough for it, and they work the last four Saturdays somewhere, you know, as an electrician on the side, get the $1,200 and walk in and plunk down the cash for the bed, I think that's a spectacular thing. Okay. If you get a new credit card and throw it on the credit card,
and you have no hopes of paying it back, or very, I don't know that it is or it isn't. You tell me, Professor, if somebody buys a car for $31,000 and gets a loan for $30,000, did he even really buy it? I mean, these numbers are getting so extreme that I'm not even sure what my definitions are anymore. I mean, I guess he's confident, but it's not like...
Did he really buy it? I've actually only bought one of the two cars in my driveway. Does the bank own the other one right now?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah. Well, I think... there was a transfer of capital, or it was a transfer of cash,
right,
that occurred when... So it was, at least from the seller's side, it was bought.
Well, on the state side, it was bought. You paid the tax.
You would think that at some point, you know, because I heard you talking where you were saying that on the networks, they keep talking about how the consumer's going to carry the economy. Well, what happens when the consumer can't borrow anything else?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
And they've maxed out their credit cards, and you know they're not going to be able to carry the economy anymore.
Well, so, I mean, you know, the whole idea is, mm-hmm. you would like, you know, Russell, AV, whoever it is, if you're making 100 hours last year, that you make 105 this year, and it's real dough, it's not inflation, or the inflation's 3%, and you make 105, you're up 2, right? You'd love that to happen every year. Because you're producing more, you're doing something. A lot of it's automation, whatever it is. I mean, you're doing better year over year in real terms. So you can remodel a home. You can put a new roof on. You can buy a new home. You can get a new car. It's not just all about consumption. It's about improvement. It's about education. It's about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the basic, if you don't see that every year the median income is going from 35 to 38, which would be 10%. And another thing that I'm weirded out here, the word weirded out is the right term. When you start talking percentages, Russell, and again, I don't know how you do this in class, these are things you never had to teach or even mention. You start talking about the median income right now, the debt clock has median income at 33.5. I've seen other places that number is like 36, so I think they're a little light. Mm-hmm. But the median income in 2000 was like 33. So it's up, you know, I'm going to say 10%, and I don't even know if that's inflation adjusted. It's up 10% in really 19 years. Well, all this other stuff, I mean, I went through the inflation calculations last week for things, are up 2.5%, 3%, 250 to 300%. So it's not like this year, if you raise, you know, college tuition 3% and the average is 50,
uh-huh.
and you say somebody's median income went up 4%, if you haven't kept pace the whole way, you're almost telling a lie by saying that the person's ahead of the game, because you're not. It's like General Motor or General Electric falling from 50 to 5. And then going back to 550, saying it's up 10%. It's up 10% from where? You know what I'm saying?
Very little.
So the average worker for us to even be talking in terms of percentages, which the research I've done in the last month, the poor bastard needs a 20% raise this year just to get the percentages even to where you can start talking about. He's up 4, prices are up 3, he gained on the world. Right now, if he's up 4 and everything else gains 3, he's losing, the way I look at it. If you look at it from 20 years ago. And I don't know how you change these numbers in the vernacular, because right now they're just flat ass wrong in terms of the impression you're giving people, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, Professor, well, grade me.
Now, on Wednesday, didn't we decide that they were wrong by design?
Well, but I mean,
they need to be sticking with a certain narrative, okay. And that as far as an inflation figure, and that inflation figure, and I've heard lots about, you know, because you bring it up an awful lot. I've heard a lot of other people bring up the same thing, that the CPI or whatever inflation measure that a lot of people pay attention to is not accurate, and that. Some of the Fed people do pay attention to some other numbers. They don't talk about them publicly, but that they are focusing in on some other numbers.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I can see where people, you know, if I was in government and you know, I had gotten elected, you know, would I be perfect? And if somebody wanted to shave a number here and there for the advantage of where I think, you know, we were going the right direction, a lot of this stuff is probably almost well-meaning. But, I mean, after 18 or after 18 or 20, I didn't say it's right. I said it might be well-meaning. But the matter of fact, I'd say it's absolutely not right, you know, but it's you know, in their minds, it's probably well-meaning. But the after a long period of time when you do it, you really are at a point where you almost can't use percentages. If the market, if the market drops from, you know, where are we? We're spiders, you know, we're 315 here this morning, 314.93. If something weird happens, God, I hope not, and we drop to like 150.
Oh my goodness.
You can't say, well, what's the problem? We're up 3% today. 3%, it's $4.
We got it back.
We're still down 140, idiot.
Yeah, S&P was at, 666 or whatever back in 2008?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it got to 1,000? Yay!
Yeah, yay.
You can't. Yay for the two people that actually bought at the bottom.
Right.
I've yet to met a person that said they actually bought at that bottom. Well, back to the, at least with respect to the government numbers, again, I'm going to start sounding like a conspiracy theorist, and I don't like sounding like that, but there is an agenda behind how they're trying to manage the economy. There just is, and it's not a nefarious agenda. It's a if the economy and everything breaks down, I think everything else is going to follow very quickly. So the Fed's got a really important responsibility. And sometimes you do something for the short term because that's what you feel like you've got to do to maintain order. And you're pushing the ball down the, you know, you're pushing the inevitable drop down the road. And that's the part that a lot of people have been arguing about for years, is it's going to catch up with us, and it seems like it hasn't yet, and you've got to wonder if it going to catch up with us.
Well, the
have they kind of figured out how to get, maybe they've gotten smart enough to figure out how to get things under control.
There's a
managed the economy quite well.
Somewhere in my mess here, since you come into the office, or my filing system, that I think have sort of filed, so I might even be able to find it. I have a piece of paper, well, many pieces of paper. It's an article regarding Congress and the government's view of managing the economy. It has to do with virtually all recessions are business cycle recessions, right? So, I mean, they're somewhat natural, right? And it's really what has to happen is when you go into one of these little downturns because, you know, things got too hot, stock market got too high, whatever. You know, people got too much inventory, and all of a sudden there's almost a natural, you know, culling of that. And, you know, and it doesn't last, you know, some people go out of business, and then all of a sudden somebody goes, wait a minute, that place, we needed that place, they go in business again. I mean, that's a natural way of doing things. The two spots that I think were different was the Great Depression, because you essentially stole money off people's balance sheets by the banks closing and people losing their savings. And this last deal in 2008 was a balance sheet recession, totally different, when you actually took money out of people's savings, which was in their house. You know, the 40 grand you thought you had in your house, you don't have it anymore. Whole different program than just being laid off for 6 months, being on unemployment, and then getting your job back. Right? I mean, one is a little bump in the road, one isn't. One is 40 years of saving all of a sudden gone. So you sort of have to be, but anyway, this piece of paper says that virtually all recessions fix themselves. So all you need to do, if you're a politician, is throw a couple of programs at it that don't do any good. They might actually hurt, but it doesn't matter. The economy, the U.S. economy, will fix itself. Then you can take credit for it, right? And but the balance sheet ones, they don't necessarily do that. And this time, I mean, it's all about, I mean, the tax cut was, our belief is, by cutting rich people's taxes, and I'm not so sure that they don't necessarily believe that it's gonna actually add a It's going to goose the economy in the behind enough to where 2 years from now the tax returns are going to be higher because we've grown the economy to where now it's $24 trillion and not $20. And guess what? The tax returns at that level, it all is pushing it to the point where the economy is going to fix itself and then you can take credit for it. And 95% of the time, it works. It's not like it's a horrible strategy. It's probably the right strategy 95% of the time. Don't mess with it too much. It's a natural phenomenon. The only thing is, I think the 2008 thing was not a natural phenomenon. It was different. It needed to be dealt with differently, and it wasn't. And that's why we're still feeling the effect of it. God knows.
You don't think it was dealt with differently?
Marginally.
I mean, okay.
Let's put it this way.
I'm not saying dealt with differently for the good as a good thing. Well,
I'm saying if you were to go back, here's the thing I find as an economist, half-assed. You're the one who's a professor. Is if you talk to Milton Friedman, okay, which, you know, we did in class every day. I was the back row. I wasn't asking the questions. A lot of people were. If you go back to the person in the Great Depression, your grandma Rhodes went to get her $3,000 in the bank and the door hit her in the nose. She came back with a bloody nose. Never got her $3,000, right? Well,
yeah.
I mean, and Milton Friedman would say that the Federal Reserve allowed the money supply to drop by 25% in, was it 6 months in 1931 or 30, whatever the hell it was? And that's what caused, it wasn't the stock market going down, it was the Federal Reserve, in his mind, letting the money supply drop by that amount, which they never should do. And I, of course, being one of the little dutiful guys, is writing this down. And for years, if you would have asked me what was the problem with the Great Depression, I would have said we let the money supply drop by 25% in 6 months or a year, whatever the hell it was. But now, as I study it a lot more, Russell, I think that's all BS. When I say BS, I don't think we had the float in terms of government bonds and things like that to actually buy enough to keep it even. All right?
I understand, yeah.
And also, here's the thing that I've changed differently. I've changed dramatically in my thoughts. And if Milty was alive today, I would push back real hard. No, Uncle Milty. That's BS. Because you can fix the system and pour, if you can, let's say there wasn't a float. If you poured it back into the system, it's never going to get to Grandma Rhodes. It's just going to be there in the banks for like a few people to borrow. Okay? It's not, unless they found a way to do a FDIC in arrears to where for all the banks that went out, your grandmother got a check for $1,000 of the three she lost. You never fix those people. You fix, quote, the system, but you still have, you know, 30 million people that are broke. And you have that to deal with. And in this past go around, you never actually got the money back to the guy who bought the house at 225 and now it was 165 and he lost his entire 40% down. And the society says, well, don't worry, people only put 3% down. They shouldn't have the house anyway. Good for them. That's such BS. I'm going to say 90% of the houses that were foreclosed on were regular people with a regular 10, 15, 20% down and lost all their dough. And they never got it back. And then on top of it, you came and you spent egregious amounts of tax money to buy these mortgages from the banks and save the banks when you could have used the money twice. If it was your house, they could have sent you the $20,000, then you turn around and send a check to the bank. Since the world is double entry accounting, it would have counted twice, right? Not only would you,
exactly.
Well, they didn't do that. They waited till you got screwed and then they bought the mortgage from the bank. What manner of idiocy was that?
They saved the bank. They didn't really do anything for the people.
Right. And I think the same problem is lingering that would have lingered from 1935 probably till today if there wasn't a war. Right?
You caught me on that final, if there wasn't a war. I was wondering if you're probably right. We probably would still be muddling along. And
it would have been fixed by now, but
you know, alternate history here. We probably would not be a single country anymore.
Maybe not.
You know, we probably, you know, Texas probably be its own place because they got all the oil. I have a funny feeling we'd be broken up a little bit, and nobody would want to live in the northeastern part of this country anymore.
Actually,
whatever's left.
You know what? Did you read the same article I did? What if we broke apart into four separate countries, and which ones would be doing okay and which wouldn't? The Northeast.
I've seen things along those lines in the past, and I've seen things saying that at some point, if we didn't need mutual defense as a country, or have it, we probably could split up into different areas.
Well, this
which would be okay, and kind of more of a European model.
Well, this article had the Northeast actually doing somewhat okay because of the financials and the. And a lot of the trade and a lot of the ownership of, some of the manufacturing. They had the Midwest doing very well because they had all the grains. They had the South doing horribly because nobody wants their stuff anymore. Not in a bad way. I'm just saying
they don't have anything. I mean, you've got the food in the Midwest.
Hold that thought, Russell. SP futures down 6 and NASDAQ futures down 24. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
This will make you wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They're located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 408-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow's Mr. Russell Rose. She's AV on the board. S&P futures down 550. Nasdaq futures down 2250. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 41.3%. FTSE down 18.2%. Back around up 14.2. Asia, not so much the same way. Mostly down here. Nikkei down 115.5%. Shanghai down 18.6. This one, Hang Seng, ouch. Down 547, minus 2%. Hong Kong is not doing so hot. Bonds, pretty much the same here across the board. 1.676 positive 10-year here. Bund minus 0.36. Japan minus 0.08. It actually, it's just two ticks to the upside, because on Wednesday that was minus 0.10, so now it's 0.08, so maybe making another move towards even. We'll see if it gets there. Gold down a whole 20 cents, so nothing going on there. And we've got oil down 13 cents, nothing going on there. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It is 7:35 in Chicago, 37 degrees currently. The weather remains steady throughout the day with cloudy skies. The highest of the day will be 40 and the lowest 37. With a high chances of rain later at night. In Phoenix, it is 51 degrees at this moment, and it's flash warnings with thunderstorms. Afternoon becoming mostly sunny, and the night expected to be clear and quiet. And the highest of the day is going to be 57, and the lowest 42. We have new accidents reported. There is a report of spin-out crash into the wall on Lakeshore Drive at Walker. Hit and run accident at Ogden and Fulton. Another hit and run on Pershing Road at South Archer Avenue. And rather than that, the traffic looks smooth and clear, the greenest map I've ever seen.
Well, it's almost a holiday, so.
Yeah, no delays, really empty city. Chief?
My neighborhood's empty. It's the one time in a neighborhood you got to kind of look over your shoulder. There is nobody around Thanksgiving weekend. Pretty scary. Hey, Russell, would you mind if I kind of went back to the Trump thing a little bit just for a second?
Sure.
And my, as you know, my resolve in 2019 was to listen more carefully and talk a little less. I don't know if I did the number two well. I still talk too much, but I am doing well on the number one. And what I notice is when somebody will say to me, you know, I can't stand Trump because he's a lying sack of crap, basically. First of all, I will agree with them wholeheartedly on a personal level. But the people who are Trump supporters, I listen to them as well. I try to. And a lot of them will tell you, and I never, I guess if you think back on all the politicians I've seen in my lifetime, what those people are really telling you, I think what you're telling me, I think what Audrey's telling me, and a lot of people that I know that can stand the man, will put up with him, they don't see any difference other than being pretty awful at doing it, telling lies. They don't see any difference between him and any other politician they've ever known. They look at all of them as total lying sacks of crap, and will tell you absolutely everything, from Bush 1, no new taxes, to weapons of mass destruction, to God knows what. They think every single one of these guys never tells the truth. And that Trump is literally no different, even though he makes it so obvious that he's pretty bad at it. They don't, and you know what? I'm not so sure they're wrong about that, to be honest with you.
I've never, ever liked that basic argument. Like, I'll just give you an example. And I promise I'll come back on this one, but. Like, I was kind of surprised that Hillary Clinton didn't get more trouble for the server and all that kind of stuff. And I said that. I just, wow, I'm kind of surprised she didn't get more trouble about it at work. and a diehard pink hat wearing woman at the SIBO said, yeah, but what about Scooter Libby making call? And I'm like, I had no idea what the hell she was talking about. But I've never liked that argument that just because they all do it, it's okay, and that sort of thing. What I try to do is look at what they're doing as opposed to all the stuff that's coming out of their mouth. And he's pushing back on the Chinese. Somebody needs to push back on the Chinese.
Right.
And nobody, I don't think anybody on either side of the aisle says it's a bad thing that he's pushing back on the Chinese. But I don't like the way he's going about doing it. But then the third thing that you don't hear is, but this is how he should be doing it, you know?
Well, but
maybe he should get the rest of the world on board, but
the thing that,
he's not the kind of guy that's going to be able to achieve that. We know that.
Well, there's a couple of things there that I have a real issue with. One is, I think to a certain extent, the Trans-Pacific Partnership isolated the Chinese because they weren't a part of it.
Right? Yeah.
And he pulled out of that, I think, probably foolishly. Because I think it would have been a lot easier for that whole group to beat on the Chinese than doing it alone. Because now he essentially pulled out of the other stuff. But he loves tariffs because he thinks, and he still to this day, well, how's that for a lie? how many times per week does he tell people that the Chinese are paying the tariffs? But anybody here over the age of 4...
I know that's not true.
Yeah.
I know that's not true. But, again, I'm more about what is he trying to do out there? And I like that he's, you know, I like that he's pushing back. Here's where you're going to get, like, I'll make your head explode. I actually think that some of what is happening in Hong Kong, where people in Hong Kong are pushing back on the Chinese, might indirectly relate back to them seeing him pushing on the Chinese.
Although he hasn't been
vocally supportive, but that, you know, seeing that, you know, people just don't sit there and allow the Beijing government to do whatever they want all the time might be emboldening some of the students to say they're basically slow creep taking over Hong Kong. And I've seen that. I've been on the ground multiple years in a row, and every year I go, it's kind of like the relative that you see once a year at Thanksgiving who gains 5 pounds a year.
Yeah.
You just progressively see them getting worse. I progressively saw Hong Kong becoming more like mainland China every year. Fewer cab drivers that spoke any English whatsoever. All the signs had been changed over from English to Mandarin. Just everything was, it used to be English was the primary language, and then I believe Mandarin, I always get Mandarin and Cantonese mixed up, but one of those was the secondary language, and it's flipped over. And anybody that's, you know, going to be in charge there has to be approved by the government in Beijing. There's just been a slow creep of takeover, and they had been taking it. And you know, the president before Obama actually periodically would praise the Chinese for some of the ways they ran their system. You don't really see Trump doing that.
Well, he loves the fact the guy's a dictator.
I do think that some of what is going, some of the pro-democracy movement over there probably is an indirect result of having a president in the United States that has pushed back on the government in Beijing. They see that somebody, that it is possible to push back.
I don't, by the way, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, except to me, how you do something. By the way, the Chinese taking it over a little bit at a time. It's sort of like five firms taking over all the trading floors a little bit at a time, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it's the same thing. Just, you know, hey, we got an independent group. We're going to help back here. And then 6 months later, why don't we just bring you guys in?
But here's my... you asked me regarding what they're doing right now, and I... Yeah, John and I were on the score 20 years ago, for God's sake, and I remember talking then about how everybody knew, and I always said how hard it was to be president, okay, because if Russell Rose is in the Oval Office and, you know, go back 15 years, you're going to have Bill Gates wandering in there and saying, hey, President Rhodes, Mr. POTUS, These guys have, you know, 50 million desktops, and they bought, you know, four copies of Microsoft Office. I mean, what the hell? You know, that's a problem. And you're going to say, okay, well, that's a problem. And all of a sudden, we're going to have AV walk in, who's the president of Coke. Hey, what are you doing? Or there's a billion people over there having a Coke a day. Don't rock this boat. Or the guys from Kentucky Fried Chicken. There's more pictures of Colonel Sanders than there are a mile, you know, in the country, for God's sake. So, I mean, it's a very uneven sort of event. But everybody knows they stole all the Beatle albums. They stole, this was absolutely fair game for anything that was a copyright, everything 20 years ago. But now, fast forward.
And we allowed it to get to
But I'm saying that that's, to a certain extent, Russell, I think that's yesterday's news. It's like the generals fighting the last battle. Now it's different. Now it's Boeing giving them the plans to a plane in return for them ordering Boeing planes versus Airbus. Now, are we going to spank Boeing for that? Are we going to say, here's a list of 200 items that we don't want these guys getting at all, just like we don't want to, you know, send...
No, we're going to set up a system where they have a choice as to whether to do that. You could say that they had no choice under the current system.
Well, you had a choice, was no.
Well, yeah, it's a very large market.
Okay, but I'm saying, you're not going to get... Here's where I'm coming with this. You're not going to get your neighbor's kids to discipline your kids. That's something you got to do yourself, pops. What I'm saying is
your neighbors to discipline your kids.
Yeah, you're not going to get them to do that. So
yeah.
The point is if we care about them, a company here, say, not being able to buy over 49% of a company in China. I got an easy way to solve that. Nobody in China can buy more than 49% of the company here.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't want that, because if some whatever, like Wilbur Ross, wants to sell his steel company to the Chinese at a big price, we don't want to stop him from doing that, because he's a rich guy, and rich guys run this guy's administration. You can do a quid pro quo. Why do we let them buy the stuff here? The answer is we shouldn't. So Russell Rhodes' cousin out of China buys somebody's, you know, manufacturing facility here. We're going to say you can buy it, but you can't. The patents don't belong to you. The process doesn't belong to you. You can buy a Mack truck, but you can't look under the hood and find out what's there. That's insanity, Russell. I mean, let's do what they do if we're worried about it.
Well, maybe we should start doing what they do.
I'm with you.
Steal their but they don't have any good intellectual property yet.
Well, but I'm saying
they're getting there.
Why are
they're
we letting?
Getting there.
Why
they're actually they are getting there to where they are going to suddenly want some protections around their intellectual property like we want, and I think that might be one of the things that brings them to the table or gets us to an agreement.
Could very well, but what I'm saying is you can't let them buy places here, and they can't look at what they bought.
And they can,
I mean, right? They can't buy it.
Then you just don't let them buy places.
Well, okay,
we didn't let them buy the Chicago Stock Exchange.
Right, but nobody. But who cares about Chicago Stock Exchange? I mean,
well, but I think it was actually I think it was a bigger deal than because it was a way that they could burrow their way, and they've been trying to figure out how to link into our financial system forever. We've done a good job of blocking that.
Don't disagree.
We know what their history is.
Don't disagree. What I'm saying is. Yeah. You can't have them. Sure, you can buy a whole place here, but you can't have the intellectual property. What do you mean? I just bought the place. You know, don't let them buy it.
Well, that's why. Yeah. Well, then we start to protect intellectual property in that way, and I think we have periodically.
What I'm saying, if we don't want these guys to get the technology for the Boeing tail on the 787, you got to tell Boeing, don't sell it to them. You don't sell the Chinese. Don't ask for it. How do you do that?
We don't say that don't ask for it, but if Boeing felt that they had the backing of the U.S. government, that might go in there and say, look, you know, you guys want to figure out how to copy Boeing's planes in exchange for buying them, we're just not going to allow that. You still need planes.
Well, then that's the person that's going to go to jail there, if it happens, has to be the board of Boeing, not somebody in China. You don't try and put Hitler in jail for somebody here selling him the plans of the P-51 Mustang.
Well, you don't. I mean, in really, in this case, with what's going on with China, what you're talking about occurred when nobody was pushing back on China. The whole tail versus
what makes you think? I mean, we're just jousting like we normally do. What makes you think that Boeing gives a rat's behind about the U.S. multinational company? They don't care if they sell. You think they care about selling F-35s to Turkey, who might end up being an enemy next year?
Oh God, no! They don't care about that part. But what they do care about is giving the plans to a country that has enough wherewithal to copy what they're doing.
I think that they're convinced that the carbon fiber. Let's put it this way: if you thought people had the long term view that you have and I have, and that's why we're arguing about this. We care enough to argue about it. How's that? If everybody had a long term view, would anybody pollute? When all you have to do is look and see that when you're finally caught, the cost to clean something up is 10 times what it was if you didn't dirty it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So, but the thing of it is if AV figures she's retiring in 3 years and she gets buku bonuses because she sold 28,000 planes to the Chinese, she'll give them the whole plane. She didn't care. So that's what you sort of have to stop. I mean, and I don't think these companies, these governments, they're so far behind these multinational corporations. It's scary. I mean, we cannot control Boeing. Look at the people on Dr. J, who's on with his crew of whatever those guys are at 11 or 12 in the morning, and they're talking about Boeing. How you got to buy Boeing because at the end of the day, these guys got to play, buy Boeing planes, and they'll just raise the prices. And I'm sitting there, so I send Jan. I said, well, your gang. I didn't say idiots. Your gang around you, even though they don't know they're doing it, they're actually having an interesting debate over what is the correct pricing of a monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jan goes, you're right, they don't get it. But, I mean, what is the number?
And he's never going to throw that one out there.
Oh, no. No, why would he?
Yeah.
But I'm saying, what are you talking about? You're saying that no matter what, at the end of the day, if these things are death traps, we only got two people left in the world, the other guys are full up, they're going to have to fly them. I mean, where are we going with this? It's a perfect example of where you shouldn't be. A duopoly, and all of a sudden you need the product. Now what?
Yeah.
And do you think Boeing really cares? They're going to be Trump, even if he wins his second term, is going to be out of office before they deliver the planes they got last week on the order. Do you think they care about Trump and the fact that he's pushing back on them a little bit? He's going to be gone. I remember when I was on the board of the SIBO, the staff said even if he gets two terms, We'll still be here, and he'll be gone. I'm already a bit on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. Not that they didn't like me; they did, but I was liable to say something they didn't want to hear.
And they were counting down the clock on you.
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, on a personal level, I think we were all fine.
I'm gonna go back to what our original thing was, and you're talking about how you mentioned that. One of the standard arguments about the politicians is, well, they all lie, so who cares?
Yeah.
I never want to use that argument when I'm having, or I never want to use that defense when I'm having any sort of discussion whatsoever, because I don't think that's legitimate. I get caught speeding, and I see somebody that was ahead of me that went really fast that the cop didn't, my excuse should not be, well, that guy was speeding.
You're getting absolutely zero pushback from me on this.
I've always thought that such a BS, just an
you and I
absolute. But that's what we were starting out with. So
No, I wasn't. Hopefully, give me a second. I misspoke, Russell. That's absolutely
No. I don't think you were saying you thought that either.
No, I mean, I'm saying
you just brought that one up, and then my response was. I've got AV's got the whole transcript right here,
yep.
And she just handed it to me. And your response was, we started talking about. I started talking about how I look at what's been going on, what the actions are, and I really try my darndest, especially with the current president, to not listen to the crap that comes out of his mouth. You have railed on healthcare costs. and how they're a lot more inflationary than, yeah, you know, is being let on. And part of the problem with that is there's a lack of transparency. He's pushing for transparency in healthcare costs.
Right. Oh, I agree.
And I saw some really cool stats the other day that came out of this, like that, you know, that a C-section costs five times more in California than in Tennessee. That there's no rhyme or reason to the current healthcare costs, and he's
sure there is. The guy,
I think there's a belief if there's some transparency behind this that it might push some prices down.
He's absolutely right.
You got to be what?
You got to be
That's something he did.
There is a rhyme or reason to it. The administrators in California make 10 times more than they do in Tennessee.
I'm sure there's a lot more red tape in California than Tennessee.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more I know there's more taxes. Tennessee is one of the few no-income tax states. I'm not saying achievements because I don't think he's achieved a whole lot, but I do look at the things that he's tried to do. And there are a lot of things that I think he has tried to accomplish
that are
for the greater good for everybody. And I actually believe pushing back on China is one of those.
I would agree. I what I'm saying is the part about I was going 85, but a guy yesterday went 90. Mm. By the way, nobody's more in your camp on that one than me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
I've never liked that one, and I try. So, and I almost snicker to myself when people use that one against me.
Well, I guess
or
what I'm saying
is when I see that on Twitter. Well, what about when Obama did this?
Let me rephrase on my comment about Trump then, because I obviously, like I said earlier, you just proved it to me. It's not what I thought I said; it's what you heard. It's important.
Yeah.
What I said was I'll try to do better, Professor. You gave me an F. You gave me an F on the last paper, and now I'm coming trying to get a C on this one. You know, and it happens. What I'll say is, I didn't realize the general lack of low feelings, disregard, whatever you want to call people's attitudes towards politicians in general.
Oh yeah. You know, I haven't seen one lately, but whenever you see. Like a poll where they ask, what's your opinion of Congress? And it's like 15% have a favorable view. And that's probably people that personally know somebody in Congress. I mean, there's just such a low opinion of all of these.
But
polls.
I mean, look at that.
I think Mike Bloomberg might be the only person running for president. You know what? Him and Yang and Gabby, just because, you know, Gabby. Those are probably the only three that I would actually want to spend any time with.
Actually, I think you wouldn't mind that Steyer guy.
Who's he?
The Democrat that nobody knows about. He made money in the
I'd just like to get to know him. Then there you go.
Yeah,
because you're a good judge of character.
Well, okay. I like what he said when Andrew Russ Sorkin was talking about the wealth tax being class warfare, and he goes. You mean the last 20 years where the one percenters ended up with all the money wasn't class warfare? I mean, right? I mean, he goes, all we're looking is for to even out a little bit. But you know, I guess when you look back on it, though, I mean, we'll say, okay, let's see. Bush got us into a war, and there's people running along the lakefront without legs because of weapons of mass destruction that weren't there. Now we got Obama saying you could keep your own insurance company, which obviously you couldn't. So, I mean,
I honestly, and I'm no fan of the guy, I honestly don't, I think he probably believed that when he said it.
Okay, but I'm saying, now Trump says something stupid, and somebody says, well, gee, he's lying, and somebody goes, what's new? I mean, it's, you know, I think it's slightly different than the 85-mile-an-hour example. Slightly.
I know. That was the best thing I could come up with on a Friday morning.
Oh, by the way, thank you for, now, what are you going to do all day? Are you going shopping?
My pleasure.
Are you a shopper
guy? I had to put a little sticky note on my phone to remind me.
Are you a shopper guy, or are you letting everybody else go shopping?
Oh, I am not a shopper guy.
Me neither.
I'm a online shopper guy, and you've already yelled at me about that.
I used to leave the trading floor in the 80s at 3:15 on Christmas Eve. I would race over to Marshall Fields, go downstairs, find a guy who would help you. I'd buy all my stuff, and I'd make it back into the saloon by 5 o'clock. And the stuff would be all wrapped. I'd be happy as a clam. That ship has sailed. That ship has sailed, my friend.
You know, the only thing that I do along those lines, and I won't be able to do it this year, the day after Christmas,
there you go.
What used to be Marshall Field, going into Macy's, because they just mark everything down.
You know, Dr. J's whole family,
yeah.
they'd meet together the Saturday after Christmas and exchange gifts, because they'd all go shopping the day after.
There's something to be said for that.
S&P Futures down 550, NASDAQ Futures down 24. Russell, happy Thanksgiving day after. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
What do we learn, Palmer?
Okay.
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.